Chapter 11. Rouge. Zoe went straight to bed after getting out of her pod. She barely made it before her dad's so arbitrary log-out time, but for once she was actually tired. She sent a belated thank you for the heads up to Jace, then ordered Emily to turn off the lights, and with a final thought that tomorrow was definitely the day to change her AI's name, she was asleep. The alarm went off way too soon, and she got ready for work. Her favorite pants were dirty, so she pulled on a skirt and blouse, her comfy shoes, which really didn't even look that ugly anymore, smoothed her hair up into the simplest poof ever, and ran down the stairs. Max was waiting for her in the kitchen as usual, with his head on his paws, staring at his empty food dish. Quickly she poured him some kibble, and he gave a quick thank you slurp before attacking it with his face. Her dad entered a moment later, looking as tired as she felt, and she gave him an impulsive hug. His heavy sweater felt loose under her arms, and she looked up at him in surprise. "Have you lost some weight, Dad?" His cheeks darkened, and he scrubbed a hand over his hair, which was beginning to grow out to the point she liked the best, somewhere in between fresh buzz and afro. "Ah, yeah? I realized I was going to need to buy some bigger pants soon, and you know I hate clothes shopping." She stepped back and stared at him. Her eyes narrowed, and she pointed an accusing finger at him. "You're hoping to meet Bree Stevenson, aren't you? You figure when all this is over, Bridget will introduce you to her mom in real life, and you want to look good." His ears turned an impressive shade of brick beneath their deep brown tone, and he drew in a deep breath, closing his eyes. "Okay, yes. I would like to impress Ms. Stevenson, if I get a chance to meet her." She felt a huge grin stretch across her face, and she pumped her fist. "Yes. I am going to get so much mileage out of this. But you know you've already met her, right? I mean, it's pretty obvious she's—" Her dad's hand covered her mouth, and his eyes flicked to the house interface screen in the wall nearby. "That may be true, and it may not. We're not supposed to talk about it, and there's no point in speculating, since it won't change anything anyway." Carefully, she removed his hand, which still smelled faintly of his Bear Glove body wash, and stuck her tongue out at him. "Fine. I do have one more question, though." Turning away, he grabbed two slices of bread and headed for the toaster. His deep voice was deliberately nonchalant. "What? Are you going to ask her out?" He dropped his bread, and Max was a happy dog. When she arrived at work, still snickering occasionally at the memory of the expression on her dad's face, she was about to walk past the security desk when she saw Sam, one of the guards, beckon subtly to her with a tilt of the head. She walked over smiling. She and Sam had discovered a mutual love of anime one rainy morning a few weeks ago, when Zoe brought in her classic Sailor Moon umbrella, and now they traded recommendations on a pretty regular basis. Today, though, Sam's usual friendly smile was a little forced, and they reached out unobtrusively as if to touch Zoe's hand when she reached the security desk. When the hand was pulled back slightly, the edge of a slip of paper was visible, and Sam lowered one eyelid in a subtle wink. Zoe carefully slid her own fingers forward until she'd pinned the paper so Sam could withdraw. Once the paper was transferred, they exchanged a few words, and Sam turned to someone else in clear dismissal. Zoe was absolutely burning to know what was on the paper, but she knew Sam had to have had a reason for all the cloak and dagger business, so she just clutched it in her fist until she was through security, and then she ducked into the first restroom she saw. Once in the stall, she uncurled the now crumpled and sweaty slip of paper and looked at it. It held only three words, written in a hasty scribble. "Lunch Ms. Pigs." She frowned. It was obviously from Nina, since Ms. Pigs was an in-joke between the two of them, but why wouldn't the other girl just text her? She started to pull out her screen to send a message, but put it away slowly. It would be hard, but she could wait for lunch. Fortunately, it was a busy day in design. The mood was definitely subdued, with even Jasmine heavy-eyed and solemn. Everyone who wanted Bridget's job was busy putting together a portfolio to show their best work and their plans for the future of the department. Zoe caught Granny lurking around Bridget's door several times, lingering as if hoping the young woman would emerge from behind the firmly closed portal. Harris also seemed to be wandering the main hallway more than usual, in spite of the fact that he should be at his desk putting together his own portfolio. Between the two of them and the regular through traffic, Zoe herself was never able to find a moment to approach and try knocking on the door. So frustrating. When lunchtime rolled around, Zoe was just finishing up her now daily cleaning of Mr. Ham and Cheese's cage. She and the fluffball were once again on good terms, since Zoe had mostly gotten over the hamster hellion, and Hammy knew she was good for a gentle ear scrooge that wouldn't overly disturb his daily 10-hour nap. As soon as possible, Zoe darted toward the stairs, avoiding the elevator, where she was sure to be seen. It was 5 flights up to the top floor, but she nearly felt like she was flying. She wasn't even short of breath when she landed lightly on her toes in front of the emergency exit door. Whatever was in the pod goo, if that was what was making her so strong and agile lately, was really amazing stuff, because she still felt like she could keep going. Looking down, she saw that the door was slightly open, and a plastic figure of Miss Piggy was propped in the gap. She leaned over and snagged the little plastic diva, pulling the door the rest of the way open and sliding through as she did. She let the door latch quietly behind her. Nina had discovered the broken alarm on the door shortly after she first arrived, when they had a fire drill. She was on the 12th floor delivering something to Mr. Landon when the alarm went off, and she hadn't known it was a drill. So naturally, she headed for the stairs, and decided that using the emergency exit was safer than going down 12 flights of stairs into an unpredictable situation, and it had emergency right there on the door, right? Dutifully, the older girl had swiped her badge over the security pad and ducked out the door, figuring there had to be a fire escape, or a ladder, or an inflatable slide, or something to get her down if necessary. She was disappointed, therefore, to find herself surrounded by stone floors and solid balustrades so tall she could barely see over them, even though she was almost 5'8". Clearly, this was an emergency exit in name only, and the only way to the ground was one which would end very abruptly. It was at this point, however, that the alarm stopped blaring, lights stopped flashing, and Veritas Corp sent out a message to all employees in the building that the drill was complete and they should return to work. Nina then had to open the door to go back in, cringing as she realized that this time the alarm would be her fault. No alarm. Looking around, Nina had noted several old cigarette butts in a mossy bucket of sand nearby. Putting two and two together, she realized that someone, probably someone fairly high up in the company, since it was all top execs on the 12th floor, had used this as their own illicit smoking room. Since the increased luxury tax had been applied to cigarettes a decade or so before, raising the price of a single pack to well over $30, even the most dedicated smokers had finally given in. No smokers meant no need for smoking areas, so the few who could afford the habit had to make their own space. Once the discovery had been made, it took Nina only a few weeks to determine that it was no longer in use. The number of butts in the bucket never changed, and when she put a piece of tape across the door, it was still in place a week later. Nina then turned it into her own hidey hole, gradually bringing up a chair, an umbrella, and even a small folding table. She didn't use it often because she actually liked her job and rarely felt the need for someplace to hide for longer than a bathroom break, but when she wasn't feeling well or just needed a breather after showing around a particularly difficult guest, she headed up here. When she'd shown it to Zoe, after making her pinky swear she'd never tell, they had discovered that Zoe's badge wouldn't open the door at all. As a runner, Nina's badge allowed her through almost any door in the company. As a temporary intern, Zoe's was limited to design and the main access areas. So much for emergency exit. Zoe felt a little like the passengers on the lower level of the Titanic, who were locked in when the ship started to sink, and she was only slightly mollified by the fact that anyone who tried to escape through the door was likely to die a fiery death anyway. In any case, Nina had used the little figure of Miss Piggy that served as her lucky charm, because Miss Piggy was apparently somehow the inspiration for Nina's glasses obsession, to prop open the door so Zoe could get in and out. They'd only eaten lunch there twice, but Zoe had joked that Miss Piggy was the hostess, and thus it became Miss Piggy's Cafe. Now, Zoe tossed the little figurine into Nina's waiting hand and saluted jauntily. "What's with all the secrecy, Nina?" The taller girl was looking unusually pale and serious, and her eyes flickered around the small space, reminding Zoe of how suspiciously her dad had been eyeing the house AI earlier. She felt the grin drop off her face, and her brows drew together. Nina? Nina drew in a long breath, then stepped past Zoe and pushed firmly on the door, making sure it was thoroughly latched. "Look, Zoe," she muttered quietly, leaning in even though no one else could possibly hear her. "I saw something. I shouldn't even tell you. You know how this lot is, always thinking someone is out to steal from them. But I saw something that was a bit suspicious, you know, and it had your name on it." Zoe's eyes widened. "What was it?" Nina shook her head, looking around again. She reached into her pocket and pulled out her screen. She unrolled it before looking up, her expression conflicted. "I could be fired for this. But I trust my intuition, and it's telling me you need to see this." She unlocked the screen with her thumb, and Zoe could see that an image was pulled up. On it was a single piece of paper, with a series of names neatly written on it in a looping, feminine script. One corner was torn, but it was still legible. Zoe pulled back, a sharp twinge of something like electricity traveling down her spine. "What is that? Where did you find it?" Nina shrugged. "Ms. McKean was in a meeting first thing this morning, and called me to go down and get a file from her office. She's the worst about not trusting digital security. Keeps her personal files on a system that's not online, and prints out anything she needs to show other people. She'd left the file on her desk, but when I picked it up, this was stuck to the back. Look, there's something on the other side." She slid her finger over the screen, pulling up the next image. It was clearly the same sheet, with only a few more words scrawled across it at an angle. Nina looked at Zoe, words tumbling out excitedly. "I don't know what's going on, but I wouldn't want to see my name on a list like that, and your dad is on there too. There's no reason for him to be on a list relating to your job, eh? I found it caught beneath the edge of the desk and I put it right back, like I never saw it, but just in case, I didn't want her to see me talking to you right after I had a chance to read it, but I thought you should know." Zoe grilled Nina to see if the other girl had any more information, but that was it. The meeting Ms. McKean had been in was a regularly scheduled every Tuesday morning meeting for the personnel department, so no clues there. Nina loved conspiracy theories. She was almost completely convinced that the moon was actually a hologram, and had a definite tendency to see mysteries and plots in the most everyday situations. Which amused Zoe, usually, since she was usually quietly eating a sandwich while Nina ranted, not knowing that the teenager right beside her was involved in a real-life conspiracy. None of which explained the list. And the fact that one of the people on said list was now dead. And crossed off. Ominous much? But still, the list could be something relatively innocent, like, say, trying to figure out who knew about the sell it, give it away contest, even though Ms. McKean theoretically wasn't supposed to know about it herself, but even the best-kept secrets would start slipping over time, and since the Viper was in HR, a lot of people theoretically went to her with their concerns, though honestly, who would be stupid enough to trust her with anything? Zoe took a mental breath, then let it out slowly, trying to calm her racing thoughts. It was obvious that Georgia McKean knew something. Probably something she wasn't supposed to know. The list of names seemed to be mostly those on the give-it-away side of the contest, though according to Bridget, Dr. Joe was a sell-it. Maybe he'd changed his mind? How would Ms. McKean know when Bridget didn't? In any case, crossing off the name of someone who couldn't affect the outcome made sense, right? Cold-blooded, sure, but that person couldn't change anything anymore. Unless, of course, she was a real cyber zombie. But there was seriously no way for McKean to know that, so. Okay, another breath. So the real question was, what was up with the note on the other side? The deadline part was easy, though Zoe was realizing that deadline was just an unnecessarily sinister word, because that would be a little over 6 months from when Bree Stevenson said she was going on hiatus and vanished. Bridget hadn't told them when the competition would end, but September 12th made sense. Which reminded Zoe that she'd never asked what happened if neither team won. Like, if Zoe didn't complete the quest chain and the bad guys didn't finish theirs either, what happened? Did they start over? Did one side or the other win by default? Did it come down to who was closest? Were there points or something? Zoe had a bad feeling that if there were points, her side wasn't exactly racking them up. They'd spent all winter hanging out in a two-room hovel eating snacks and weaving bad hats after all. Okay, okay. Okay. There was FH. Someone's initials? Player name? Zoe was all for it being Fart Hat, except that he was actually really mean and kind of badass, and if he was the bad guy in-game, that didn't bode well for the good guys, but who would write a note on paper in the real world for a player online? Unless, of course, Zoe's dad had actually signed her up for long-term immersion, and none of this was real, because she was in a simulation of real life. She looked up at Nina, who was watching her with an expression of concern and worry. Smack me. Or spin a coin or something. No, wait, I'll try and use one of my skills. She stretched out her hand and tried to trigger sleight of hand and steal something from Nina. Nothing. She huffed out a sigh of relief. Concern was winning over excitement in Nina's big brown eyes, and she shoved her bright purple with fuchsia stars cat eyeglasses up her nose with excessive force. So don't smack you? Nina asked. Her eyebrows drew down as her expression grew calculating. Because if you've been keeping some actual conspiracy from me, while I was telling you about how Elvis' head is in cold storage in Area 52, I'm going to. Zoe cringed back dramatically and laughed a little. No, I'm sure it has something to do with my internship here. Those are all people involved in it, though I'm not sure why Amy would be on there. Maybe she was working on it before her accident? Because of the part where I work with Dr. Joe. Amy was in R&D too, right? And, Jasmine probably had to do some paperwork? Nina looked disappointed and touched her screen, expanding the second image. So, what about this? You can't tell me you're getting paid $1 million. If you are, you're taking me out to dinner. Like 100 times. Plus, your internship ends next Friday, right? It's still 2 months until September 12th. And, I looked it up, and there's no one with the initials FH in this building except Farah Hudson in dining, and Franz Heinsberger, but he barely speaks English, even though he's a beaut of a programmer. Zoe shrugged, trying to look as confused as Nina. Not really a big stretch, since she was confused, just maybe not actually as much as the older girl. Maybe she just scribbled that note on the back of an old list, and the two have nothing to do with each other? I mean, why wouldn't you put them both on the same side of the page? Nina spluttered, holding up her fingers in a 3 inches by 4 inches rectangle. It was small. Like, I'm trying to be sneaky, so I'm going to write on a tiny piece of paper, small. Eyes widening, Zoe attempted nonchalance. Oh! Was it like special paper too? Shiny? Thick? Nina looked from the screen to Zoe. Yes. It was. Good cardstock with some of that pearlescent look to it. Like the little papers they used for the table, with Amy's picture on it? You know, for people to write notes on? Zoe's voice was small. Nina nodded, eyes huge. Exactly like that. Zoe gulped. I'm sure she was just thinking about something, and grabbed the nearest piece of paper to write a note. Or two. Or you know, they had to get that paper from somewhere. There are probably stacks of it sitting around in the warehouse. It's just a coincidence. But she was thinking about a torn card and a vicious whisper, and wondering if that was true. After that, the two girls found that what had been a thrilling exercise in spycraft had suddenly become something with a painful edge of truth to it. The reality of Amy's death was not fun at all. Nina cleared her throat. I'm going to miss you when the internship is over, but maybe it's for the best, eh? Zoe shrugged noncommittally, well aware that while her job was almost over, her involvement in the competition was far from done. One person on that list was dead, and if Bridget was right, multiple attempts had been made on her life. Then there was Dr. Joe's recent injury. Was that really an accident? Why was Jasmine's name there with the rest of them? Zoe distinctly remembered Jasmine being surprised to see her on her first day. So the head wrangler of cats hadn't been in on the secret then, at least. Viperface McKean had been harassing Jasmine pretty hard the other day though, so maybe the list was just, people I don't like? But then why was Zoe's dad on it? As far as she knew, he'd never even talked to the snake. As thoughts and theories tumbled wildly through her head, Zoe caught movement from the corner of her eye. In her current state, caught halfway between reality and a cascade of ifs, thens, and maybes, she reacted without thought. Spinning, her foot flicked up, snap kicking something out of the air and sending it catapulting over the high balustrade and presumably sliding down the side of the pyramid. Nina gaped at her, clutching the hand she'd barely snatched back in time to avoid having it also meet Zoe's foot. She looked back and forth between the railing and Zoe. If you changed your mind about trying the wasabi potato chips, you could have just said so. Zoe smiled weakly. Dr. Joe was in his office when Zoe arrived, out of breath and nearly late. Sarah, looking much happier and more relaxed, was hovering around him, offering ice packs and fetching anything the man looked at for more than a moment. It was almost like Sarah was glad to be able to do things for him. Zoe narrowed her eyes and watched for a moment before the two were aware that she was there. Dr. Joe just looked tired and a little out of sorts, which made sense since his right foot and ankle were in a compression cast, and his leg was propped up on a chair by his desk. Sarah, though, really did look happy, and when Joe wasn't looking at her, which was most of the time, actually, because he seemed to feel that Sarah was going just a little over the top, she was looking at him like, as Zoe's grandma liked to say, he hung the moon. Sarah was totally crushing on the doc. The doctor who had been engaged to someone else less than a year ago. Someone else who was conveniently now dead, or mostly dead anyway, after being involved in what Bridget was convinced was not an accident. Now Dr. Joe had had a much less serious accident, and was basically completely dependent on his beautiful, smart assistant. Who would absolutely not have killed his fiancée or injured him, so that he would see her as something more than an assistant. Because things like that did not happen in real life. Clearly, Nina's paranoid tendencies were rubbing off on Zoe. Either that, or both of them were spending way too much time in Vo, where game logic ruled. Or both. Pasting a smile on her face, Zoe walked loudly into the lab, practically stomping her feet as if shaking off non-existent mud. Dr. Joe and Sarah looked around. Dr. Joe looked almost relieved, while Sarah's expression showed a flicker of irritation before smoothing into casual welcome. Joe levered himself from behind his desk, and when his cast neared the floor, she heard a faint whirring sound as the servos in the cast kicked on, producing an air cushion that would keep him from putting too much pressure on the injured appendage. He picked up a cane from where it was leaning against the bookshelf behind him, and step slid his way toward her. Zoe. I'm glad you made it. I was starting to wonder if the excitement yesterday had scared you off. Sarah told me about your little confrontation with Dr. Veralt. I do appreciate the both of you standing up for me and the security of the project, but rest assured that our department is a team, and you don't need to worry about anything. While Dr. Veralt's bedside manner could use some work, I'm certain he's just as dedicated to Veritas Corp as the rest of us. Dr. Joe smiled broadly, showing his crooked bottom tooth in a smile that looked as fake as his words sounded. His eyes flicked behind her at the partially open door, and Zoe turned just in time to see the edge of a lab coat vanish down the hall. As the door shut with a click, the smile faded, and Dr. Joe leaned forward, speaking in a low voice. Seriously though, good job. Usually, I keep everything closed up behind passwords and biometric locks, but when the cart ran over me yesterday, he tapped his cane meaningfully against the side of the cast, I'd already opened everything in preparation for your arrival. None of our findings would have been compromised, but our research methods and data collection would have been enough. We're a competitive bunch around here, you know, and yearly bonuses ride on impressing the boss with your creativity and results. He chuckled, but Zoe was certain there was more to it than raises and bonuses. Though if that $1 million on Ms. McKean's note was in reference to that. She shook her head slightly, smiling back, then shifting her gaze to include Sarah. That's okay. I don't get to scare off people like that very often. He kind of reminded me of my humanities teacher, and that guy collects his boogers in a jar in his desk. Dr. Joe and Sarah made identical repulsed expressions, and Zoe waved her hands. I mean, he definitely blows his nose a lot, and he has a jar of some yucky yellow stuff, so that's what somebody told me. It's probably not true. Dr. Joe burst out laughing, continuing far longer than Zoe thought reasonable. Even Sarah was giving him an, "Are you okay?" look by the time he finally swiped tears away from his eyes and took a few gasping breaths. Sorry. You just reminded me of my own high school career, and a particular instance where my best friend and I stole the chemistry teacher's spare dentures, and, anyway, thank you. I needed that. He swiped at his eyes once more, nodding toward the changing room. You ladies go get set up, and I'll start the pod diagnostics. Let's have a good day, shall we? It wasn't until Zoe was alone in the changing room, pulling on her bodysuit, that she realized neither she nor Dr. Joe had mentioned the other thing that happened yesterday. It was as though Amy's death didn't matter to Joe at all.